Under the Stone of Destiny. Chapter 2. The Truth Needs Coin. Megra and Kevin fell into the routine of Barry's establishment. Barry wasn't worried about Kevin and had no way to find out more about Megra. Megra was speaking a little more. It was clear now that she only wanted to speak when confident of being correct and understood much more.
Beth? Asked Barry.
Can you run the shop a bit more tomorrow than usual while I'm away at market with Kevin?
I suppose Megra can mind the kitchen, giving me more time for the shop. The bakery ovens can be done by then. She's working out well, learning quickly, though oddly lacking in any practical experience.
I'll get Kevin to explain to Megra to avoid any confusion, said Barry.
Or for Kevin to get instructions from Megra. Barry had realised that it was Megra that was doing the thinking and making the decisions for Kevin. It was harder to judge the age of an elf, but she must be almost an adult. Kevin certainly wasn't. She behaved impeccably. Barry left, leaving as late as possible. It was dark by the time they reached Barry's favourite spot. Kevin unhitched the horses and Barry took them to the livery stables. Each street had one or two oil lamps, but it was very little light. Only the more important areas had the gas lights. Barry went to the courthouse. Eventually, someone came to his knocking.
I want to look at the records of the death of the wife or mistress of Lord Aldair, said Barry.
What's her name?
I don't know her full name, said Barry. It was about 4 months ago. Part is probably Colrinos.
5 crowns for a search, he insisted. I'm Thaddeus, the record keeper.
Barry thought the 5 crowns seemed a lot, as Thaddeus found the records quickly, but likely other people got very good value for the charge. Barry studied the records.
Do you charge for any questions about the records?
That's discretionary. It depends on what's involved.
It's about Miriam Curinus that was murdered in the spring, said Barry. She was garroted rather than strangled, so it seems more like an assassination than a disgruntled thief, lover or a client. Was she a doxy? It's certainly an unusual name.
Why do you want to know? Said Thaddeus after he laughed.
Her son is working for me.
Well, she was a wife in all but law for nearly 20 years, certainly long before the lad was born, possibly really his wife, but we have no record here. If the lad brought a paternity case, he might win. It's a civil matter, no criminality involved, and he hasn't the money. Lord Aldair has no shortage of money. Lord Aldair claimed at the inquest that she was a doxy, but no one else supported the claim. You can see here, he pointed, that the judgment was that Miriam was murdered by person or persons unknown for reasons unknown. No evidence of a thief, hence the allegation of a lover or client of some kind, but no evidence that either, which is why Lord Aldair was a suspect. No evidence. He had an alibi. Her son, Kevin, was away hunting. He had an alibi too. Still, he turned out her son.
Thanks, said Barry. It's a pity finding out more and establishing paternity would cost so much.
Someone has to pay the costs, said Thaddeus. Judges and clerks need to eat like everybody else. Barry headed back to the wagon. At least he'd saved the cost of a letter, which would have obviously required the 5 crowns anyway. Was there a problem at delivery? Said Kevin.
No, I was at the courthouse, said Barry.
What gave you the idea that your mother was a doxy?
Lord Aldair said so, said Kevin. progress, thought Barry. The boy is answering questions at last.
The official stance is that she was probably his wife, said Barry. They just don't have record of a marriage and no evidence at all that she was a doxy. You know her name?
Of course. Everyone called her Miriam, said Kevin. I never did, nor Lord Alder. He called her dear, and I called her mommy.
So you three were a happy family?
For a while, Kevin said nothing.
I thought so. I don't understand why he said that if it isn't true, or why someone killed her. She never did a bad thing. Actually, I'm not sure what a doxy does, except it seems to involve ends near the docks and money.
Barry was just laughing.
They take money to give entertainment of a special, personal kind to strangers, said Barry. It seems very unlikely your mother was one. It's something generally only a desperately poor woman does who has no alternatives. The courthouse record keeper certainly thought that the suggestion was crazy.
My mommy wasn't poor, said Kevin. She had gems and jewellery of her own that were from her mother and father. Real ones, quite a lot. Not the paste that Lord Alder bought her for parties. Mommy showed me how to tell and value jewellery. She must have worked in the trade as she had a lot of technical words, all about cuts, water, carat, brilliance, fire, colour, settings. She knew all about gold, silver, brass, bronze and copper. I can probably identify and value jewellery. He's not as rich as people think. He couldn't have afforded to buy much stuff of that quality. I helped on the bookkeeping as I learnt it. He didn't want others to see the books. For a long time, there were monthly payments from my mother entered into the books, and then a few months before she died, they stopped. That was strange, though. I can't believe that was her money. I need to think about this.
What happened to your mother's things?
I expect Lord Alder took them, said Kevin. Wouldn't they have become his? Although, actually, I don't think there was any payments to banks or moneylenders. He wasn't extravagant or living beyond his means, so he wouldn't have needed them for debts. There were, though, payments to other senior government people that had no matching purchases. That seems strange. Really, I don't know. Maybe everything is just where it was.
No, because they never married, said Barry. Or at least, there isn't a record here. There might be a record somewhere else. You can sleep in the wagon under my bunk. There's an extra pallet on the floor.
Barry considered the case. It would be Lord Alder's word against Kevin, unless there was another witness. He'd claim he bought them. It was a shame, but it looked like it was a lost cause. There was now a motive. Why did he disown Kevin rather than kill him too if he killed Miriam? The alibi didn't count. He could have hired the assassin. If he wasn't involved, why disown Kevin? Some part of the puzzle was missing. Kevin obviously didn't kill his mother. He hadn't even been there. Or perhaps he would have died too. Now, who knew anything about elves? He didn't want to be inviting trouble with Princess Megra under his roof. He only had Kevin's word, presumably via Megra, that it wasn't a risk. Why all the whispering anyway? What common language did they have if she knows no 30 languages and he doesn't know any elven language? Some sort of dwarfish seemed unlikely for an elf, although there was a sort of basic common language that all elves, even on other continents, understood. That left Dryadish or telepathy. If Kevin was a telepath, that might explain his expulsion.
I think it's likely those payments had something to do with your mother's death, mused Barry. They look like bribes.
Kevin said nothing. In the half light, as dawn broke, they set up the stall. Then they brewed tea on Barry's neat little spirit stove.
Tell me, said Barry, is the whispering an act? And are you really a telepath?
Sort of, said Kevin. Despite what Lord Aldair thinks, I can't read anybody's mind. I can only communicate at all with some people, to send. And Megra is the only person that I can converse both ways with so far. I can really only do it well if we whisper what we want to say as we think. I'm just whispering our own Larnian partly, that's why she's picking it up. As I'm the telepath, I can't concentrate on her whispered Hularnidhi, a dialect of High Elvish, so I haven't learnt any of it. There are really only three languages elves speak, common, regular, and high. The Dwarfish common is, of course, similar to Elfish common. That's how they communicate. That's why it's called common. It's a misconception that telepaths can read anything from a mind. They can only sense what people are thinking or saying. Certainly nothing you are not thinking consciously about.
Why, of course, said Barry. This was something. It was news to him that dwarves and elves ever spoke to each other enough to have a common language.
Because they are the same species, said Kevin. I'm sure you've heard such a rumour and discounted it as they look so different. But Megra is very well educated in dwarf terms anyway, so she knows her histories. Only her lack is that most deliberately don't learn any 2 or 3 language. This is the reason that elves allege dwarves will eventually kill any elf woman they capture, and no ransom is ever asked or paid. Allegedly, only the captured men and boys are brought back. Megra didn't want to talk about dwarves captured by elves. I suspect it's similar, though Megra claims elves are not barbaric with the prisoners. She said I was too young to know what dwarves do, but then wondered if it was propaganda. Personally, she's sceptical that anyone would be as evil as elves make out the dwarves to be. She says there isn't the same animosity on other continents. It's really just here in Magmeel, and more rhetoric than reality.
Yes, agreed Barry. I've always found dwarves to be honourable, if somewhat uncouth. I agree they have nothing good to say about elves. You'd think the Glenadriel elves were monsters to hear the local dwarves talk. I know that's simply not true.
The sun was now peeking into the market square, and potential customers were now arriving. Barry puzzled over the resolution that Kevin was a telepath, though he'd suspected it from the first meeting. Why had he been starving on the street? Or wherever had he met up with Megra, when he could go to the regional wizard's tower, the Dungraglan Castle? He was loath to ask, but if Kevin didn't know, he'd find out eventually. Surely Megra knew, though she'd not have free entry, presumably not being a Magus. Barry questioned Kevin at the next lull in business. Is Megra a Magus? No, said Kevin. She hasn't any magic. You're wondering why I didn't go to the Dunraglan Castle.
I was beginning to wonder.
I didn't know about it, said Kevin. I've led a very sheltered life, with a narrow education, from my mother only. Megra explained I'd get free entry to the Magi school, with full board, clothes, and even a small allowance, but I didn't fancy the idea. After all, the only person I can do telepathy with properly is Megra.
You like Megra? Said Barry.
We get on well, said Kevin. Nothing more. After all, she's an elf. They concentrated on serving. Hours before dusk, they were sold out. Busier? Said Kevin.
Busiest ever, agreed Barry. And we didn't have a full load. The war is starting to bite.
people are panic buying, and I can't even get the usual amount of supplies. You pack up and I'll get the horses. We'll save money at the livery stables and head back now rather than tomorrow.
Do you think there's anything in the claim of the MAGA leaders that the war between Tuas and us in Larne is really manipulation of the evil enchanter, the self-styled Ard Righter in the Black Tower? Suggested Kevin.
You don't read my look column in the paper, said Barry.
He laughed.
I'm convinced of it, even though some people think an enchanter in the Black Tower in the White Mountains is a myth. Likely there's been a succession of them. Ard Righter is a title, like High Magician. Not a name.
Not far beyond the city gates was a small, squat figure with a large backpack, obviously a dwarf. Barry slowed, as it was very unusual to see one alone and without the small, tough native ponies they loved, which, unlike the two of the animals, were not actually related to horses at all.
You want a lift as far as Caerbon? He called.
Aye, that'll be grand, said the dwarf. Galoric is me. I'll not behold any human tooth, dee though. You'll take half a crown.
Barry laughed. You're a stout lad, he shouted back, perceiving it was a youth.
I'm Barry, and this is Kevin. I'll not insult you by refusing your money.
A crown would be better. He stopped and waited.
I'd rather walk, said Galoric.
No need, said Barry, smiling. Half a crown and two bits to carry your big pack in the back.
It's not such a big bag, said Galoric. One bit, or I'll carry it on my lap.
Done, said Barry, and hauled the reins to Kevin.
Barry got down and slapped palms with the dwarf.
Give me the pack, and I'll stow it while you get up front.
But Galoric insisted on paying first. Soon they set off again, Barry in the middle with Kevin and Galoric on either side.
You can call me Gil, said Galoric. Or Galoric, whichever suits you.
Galoric had a very strong accent and a southern fisherman's dialect, but it was quite easy to understand. Barry and Kevin knew better than to ask his destination.
It'll be getting dark when we reach Caerbon, remarked Barry.
There's an inn there. The wizard's staff, said Galoric, and then laughed.
It's my local, admitted Barry. They won't turn you away if they have space, though they may be fooled due to the war, as we are on a main supply route to the front.
Aye, bad business.
Bad for my business.
They rode on for a while.
I'm heading to Dunraglan, offered Galoric. No secret. So I'm technically not part of the clan or tribe, whatever you call it, any longer. Have to train to be a wizard.
Barry grunted.
Why no longer in the clan? Said Kevin.
If you have the magic, you cannot belong to any tribe, explained Galoric. Though tribes can bid for your services if you're trained. So I need to be trained.
Does it make much difference to a person's magic powers to be trained?
A huge difference. Barry scowled.
That's what my friend Megra said too, said Kevin.
But I didn't take her seriously. You're a magus, said Galoric. Can't you sense me with your magic?
You seem sort of more solid. I can't explain. I'm only a little telepathic.
Ha!
Galoric made a grunting sound. Barry wasn't sure if it was amusement or disagreement.
You have papers, said Barry. They have got fussy lately on the gate.
Aye.
We must get you papers, Kevin, so I can send you on errands on your own, said Barry. I assume you can ride.
Well enough, said Kevin. I have papers, though. They even have Lord Aldair's seal. He did want them, but I didn't know where to look.
I'd hidden them when I came in from hunting and heard the bad news.
Barry thought he must ride better than well enough to have been away hunting on the fateful day. Also, why had he immediately thought of hiding them? He noticed that Galoric was paying close attention.
The gatekeeper wasn't interested in asking for Kevin's papers when he checked Barry's papers.
Is this dwarf another assistant? Your papers only accommodate one anyway.
No, I wish he was.
Indeed, they work hard, said the guard. Papers?
Galoric produced a large leather wallet that obviously served as a small bag with a shoulder strap from under his jerkin. He passed a folded sheet of paper that he removed from an oilskin wrapper.
That's fine, said the guard. But if the nearby inn is full, you'll have to camp outside the town. I know the other two are full. You're only just in time. I'm not letting anyone else in till morning.
It was dusk, and after they rolled through, they could hear him winching the gates across to keep out wild animals.
He can stay with me as long as he pays, replied Garrett Barry. They stopped at the inn.
Why are you charging him? Said Kevin.
When the dwarf went in, he'd be insulted if I didn't, explained Barry.
And be disappointed not to haggle. You've a bit to learn about dwarves. Besides, why not?
Galoric returned soon and didn't look very happy.
As the guard suspected and ye feared, the inn is full. They even have people going to sleep in the kitchen.
You might want to sleep in my kitchen, said Barry. There's hardly space for a third pallet in Kevin's room. The kitchen is maybe a bit drafty at times, but Beth and Megra will be up hours before dawn preparing bread to bake. Then it's warm enough. You can always stop up the drafts indoors.
They got down. Barry went in, and Galoric helped Kevin stable the horses. He insisted on helping to rub and brush them. Kevin fastened the yard gates and got Galoric to help push the wagon into the store. Kevin then helped finish up in the stable and they went into the kitchen for supper. It was nearly dark now, so Beth was long gone. Megra was on her own and setting out food as they came in. Megra and Galoric stared at each other.
Pleased to meet you,
said Megra slowly and calmly.
I don't really speak much of any kind of toasty, so I only grasped that there was someone extra for supper.
Galoric was momentarily speechless.
I presume you're the famous Megra. Not any Megra, he said in common. Galoric at your service.
He bowed deeply. Megra smiled and bowed a little. Kevin and Barry were amazed at the soft speech between the pair.
Perhaps you'd like to wash at the basin, she said in common. Then I'll serve food.
Megra went to Kevin and pointed at the basin.
Wash, she said in Larnian.
Barry and Galoric know I'm a telepath, explained Kevin.
I can telepathically hear you even when you use common. But I don't understand Galoric. I presume you were using common. He speaks Larnian fine, and he's a wizard, or will be.
Yes, said Megra in High Elvish. I'm a little surprised. But not all elves and dwarves are blood-crazed idiots. He seems to know exactly who I am.
I'm guessing Megra and Galoric are okay, Kevin, said Barry as they sat to eat, momentarily forgetting that Galoric at least understood.
Ah, there will be elves at Dunranglin College, said Galoric. I wondered when you said Megra was your friend. It's only an elven name. Now I find it's the Megra.
He switched to common.
We do take some notice of elven politics, some of us anyway. Your reputation precedes you, Megra. How did you know? Said Megra.
They were not sure if you ran away or were captured, he said and laughed. The questions were delicate. Of course, they think if we had kidnapped you and despoiled you, we'd send you back the body as a boast. Though personally, I can't remember any real such occurrence. At this stage, due to lack of any news, I'm sure they assume you've run off or got eaten by wild animals. You were very carefully described. Megra laughed until she cried. Galoric repeated a summary in Larnian for Barry and Kevin. But aren't dwarves and elves supposed to hate each other, Galoric, said Evan.
Oh, yeah, we do, said Galoric. Officially, though only here. I think a princess with no home and a Cronach wizard have to forget such petty bigotry. Nevertheless, I think best for everyone and continued truce that I sleep here rather than share a room with you and Megra. It's unusual enough that you two share, he explained again in common for Megra.
Our room is divided in two with a curtain, said Kevin. I don't know where a third pallet would go without fitting two new curtain rails or having no curtain.
Now we're finished, Galoric and I need to discuss something. Barry took Galoric to the office. Megra started clearing up, with Kevin helping. I can't charge you as much as in, unfortunately, Barry said. It's not proper accommodation, and you're sharing a roof with an elf.
Ah, she's not any elf, said Galoric. I never heard of an elf serving meat, though I see she only ate raw fruit, vegetables and crushed grain.
You do realise she's the princess, technically heir to the emperor of all the elves.
I'm reasonably sure it was Beth's cooking, just left in a meat pie oven.
Your wife?
No, said Barry. She's my master baker and pastry cook, and a general food genius. I've never married.
Is there anything I can work at here, or fix, said Galoric, rather than pay actual cash? I know I'm just a kid still, but I'm strong and skilled at all the usual things, as well as some unusual ones.
I'd appreciate a few days' work, said Barry. I can't get staff. I might even have to pay you. He paused. What do you mean by the princess and emperor? I know she's a princess of the Hulranidhi. A high elven house.
Technically, the Hulranidhi are the most senior house. The other houses only have a princess or prince as a ruler. The Hulranidhi ruler is technically emperor of all the elves, though really only has authority over the Hulranidhi. Megra would be the next ruler, empress, if Hulranidhi was like the other elven houses. Except for hundreds of years, if a princess would be an empress, she is married before the emperor dies, and her husband is emperor. I'm not sure what they'll do if they can't get her married. In theory, the emperor and the elders can decide any relation is the next emperor. But if they don't pick someone or get Megra married before the emperor dies, Megra is empress.
Is the elven emperor likely to die soon? Said Barry.
No, likely he'll live another 50 years, said Galoric.
Beth used her key to let herself in via the shop in the early hours before dawn. She was surprised to find a dwarf sleeping against one of the ovens as she set her lamp down and started to light the kitchen lamps.
Ye must be the very highly praised Beth, he said. Galoric, at your service. That was a beautifully cooked supper Princess Megra served us. Barry suggested it was your cooking.
Princess? The scullery maid? She said. No one told me. Even if she is a princess, she's the exception to the rule of elves are arrogant. I hope you were polite.
She's not any princess, said Galoric. I wonder why no one told you. She's the most senior, one of the most stuck-up, arrogant elves in the world, the high elven Hulranidhi.
Ye canna find a more exalted princess in the world. Daughter of the Emperor of all the elves, insomuch as the other elven houses take any notice.
Why is she washing my pots, peeling and chopping vegetables and working as a skivvy all day?
I'd imagine she prefers it to starving or marrying her cousin. Though I don't know much about him. Perhaps he's not as bad as made out.
There's a lot of things Barry doesn't tell me, she mused. I don't suppose you know who Kevin is.
I have no idea, admitted Glorik. But if he was any significant relation to the king, or any such, I might know. I think he lost a close family relative lately. Maybe his mother, from what they said about his papers. Some connection to Lord Aldair. I think Lord Aldair is something important in the government. Probably in the King's Privy Council.
I better get started. I don't know anything about governments, kings or emperors.
Anything I can do to help?
Clear your stuff out, she said. Wake Megra, top of the stairs facing you. Then keep out of our way or bring some coal for the oven fires.
Aye, fine, he said. And when it's light, I'll start my chores. I'll be here a couple of days helping out a bit.
What next? Exclaimed Beth. Mid-morning, Barry was in the shop and Kevin was helping Glorik repairing a mincing machine when there was a crash. The window was smashed by a rock. One of the customers that was just leaving ran out.
I can't see anybody, she reported. I'll tell the constable.
Thanks, said Barry.
I'm passing the glazier, said the other. If you want, I can tell him.
That would be a great help, said Barry. He lit a lamp, pulled close the shutters outside, and closed the door without latching it. Then he started clearing up.
The rock had a note to it. It was handwritten in imitated printed capitals. Get rid of Kevin and forget him, or you will regret it. The constable arrived as he was clearing the last of the glass.
Someone has delivered a threat, said Barry,
and showed him the note in rock. The constable took both to the daylight in the doorway. He sniffed them both and held the paper to the light.
Who is Kevin?
My new apprentice, explained Barry. But there's more to it than that.
He explained about Lord Aldair, the murderer of Miriam Corinos, who was evidently paying some of Aldair's inexplicable bills, Aldair taking her valuable jewellery that by rights was Kevin's, as he'd never actually formally registered any marriage in Dalranath with Miriam, despite their relationship of nearly 20 years.
Of course, most of it is hearsay, said Barry. Kevin's uncorroborated story. I did look at the inquest records and talk to the court record keeper in Dalranath City. The record keeper must have mentioned my interest to someone.
Someone not so bright, said the constable, as the attack gives Kevin's story legs. You think then he's a bit naive and didn't realise he'd been cheated?
Yes, said Barry. His papers even list Lord Aldair as his father and have his seal. Lord Aldair thinks they're lost, though I haven't actually seen the papers. It could be that Miriam was his wife and they were married somewhere else.
So unless Lord Aldair marries and has offspring, Kevin is the heir. Actually, a good advocate could argue that Kevin's papers and Miriam Coralina's nearly 20-year residence is a de facto marriage. If the books support Kevin's claim of payments and there's any independent verification of the jewels, he's looking at being charged with murder. It sounds like Miriam Corinos's father was a jeweller or an unusually expert collector of gems. I'm curious enough to see if there was such a jeweller.
Her father may not have been in Dalranath City. Also, Lord Aldair had an alibi.
Still, said the constable,
I'll ask. The constable there owes me a favour. You pay your taxes. Well, mostly, I think. I'm obliged to put some effort into investigating this. I'll tell the guards all to keep an eye out. I know you. You're not likely to throw Kevin out. Alibis are not always as good as they seem. I'll hold off putting any of this in your paper in the column.
I'm afraid he might leave anyway to the MAGA college, said Barry. I need the staff. I've plenty of regular chat for my column. Maybe someday in the future I'll publish with Kevin's permission. For now, it's only in my diary, locked in the cellar safe every night. I never leave anything lying about.
You're also a soft touch for the underdog and every hard luck case.
Only when it suits my business interests.
The constable laughed. You'd like everyone to think so anyway. Later, the glazier replaced the window. Barry said nothing to the others but customers' talk. You're looking very cross, Megra, Kevin remarked after supper one evening.
The dwarf boy tried to tell me how to clean the pans, she exclaimed. Also, Beth is suddenly treating me like I'm a glass ornament. Why, the stupid dwarf wasn't content to tell her I'm a princess, but exactly which princess? He told me himself as if it was something good, so I shouted at him.
I'm only understanding you by telepathy, said Kevin. But you're shouting at me in High Elvish. He's practically a man, older than me anyway.
I'm even cross at me for being rude first, Megra struggled to hold back tears. You're only a boy too. You don't understand.
Suddenly they realised that Galoric was in the doorway. Megra ran up to their room.
Oh, you shouldn't have told Beth about Megra, said Kevin.
I cannot now, said Galoric. Apologising to her even made her madder. She got all angry with me, like elves are supposed to be. I'll keep her away till she's calm again.
Unless that annoys her, said Kevin. I've no experience of girls. I expect it's girls rather than elves I don't understand.
Aye, said Galoric. Girls is trickier than elves, is true. But it's our fault for being ignorant boys. She's nearly a woman. Nearly's always worse.
That night, Kevin quizzed Megra. It's not just Galoric, he asked softly through the curtain. Something else annoyed you.
Well, I wasn't going to say, admitted Megra. But someone threw a rock the other day, smashing the shop window. It had a message saying, to get rid of you or regret it.
I see. Kevin did see. He felt miserable already. At length he couldn't help it. Megra pulled back the curtain and sat on the floor beside his pallet.
Is there something else you didn't tell me? She said.
She took his hand. I didn't know Tuati man cried.
Well, I realised when I was doing Barry's accounts what some of my dad's accounts must mean. So I think my parents were working for the evil enchanter and paying bribes to other people in the government. There was no entry for what was purchased, only a payment. On Barry's accounts, even the wage payments have a matching labour supplied entry with the same value. I did overhear them discuss the evil enchanter once. I think he must have been blackmailing them to do it. Maybe they wanted to stop. I bet the enchanter had my mum assassinated.
I think that's why your dad claimed you weren't his son, to protect you, suggested Megra. Perhaps also you couldn't be used to threaten him.
Obviously someone thinks I know something, said Kevin. Maybe because I'm a Magus, I'd be much more vulnerable to attack outside the town.
You really should get to Dunraddon Castle.
College, said Megra. She let go of his hand.
It would be safer. You need training for the magic, and eventually whoever threw the rock will attack here directly, even though it's a town with a constable and all. You do know about the bribes.
As usual, you give good advice, agreed Kevin. What about you if I go?
Kevin, other than a few days with a sprained ankle, you've never taken care of me. Wasn't it my idea to approach Barry? I think, though, you may have used some glamour on him, because my disguise was very poor. Probably even if I'd been on my own, he would have taken me on.
Kevin laughed softly.
How would you have asked? He doesn't know Elven or Common, and you didn't know Larnian. Well, hardly any.
Well, I'd have managed. I did have a few words. He did want an elf, and I have negotiated with Glanridgel for him, and I'm getting on well here now. I don't enjoy the cleaning, but the cooking and baking is fine.
You want to stay? You won't go back to the elves, your father the emperor, said Kevin.
Well, mused Megra, if I wasn't risking being married to someone I don't want, I might. I don't feel any sense of duty to be a useless princess. If I had to be empress, that would be something I'd have to do. No one could force a husband on me then.
Megra laughed.
That's not likely, though.
There hasn't been an empress in a long time. Perhaps not since your people came. We should get to sleep.
Megra forgave Galoric when it became evident that Beth had decided to ignore that her skivvy was a princess. The days passed and everyone got into a routine. Kevin went with Barry on market days. Lugnasa, summer harvest festival, with the games including hurling and horse racing at the fair, was a wonderful 3 days. Yet Galoric mysteriously had no inclination to travel on to the college, so Kevin put off making a decision about it. Barry even let them borrow books from his fabulous collection in the cellar. He even had old Inamok texts simply because they seemed like attractive hand-copied manuscripts rather than modern letterpress printing. Kevin realised too that Barry was a regular writer for both a paper in the capital and in the town here, though with the pen name Lu.
Have you changed your mind about the college? Said Kevin.
Not at all, said Galoric. But I should soon go before the autumn day that Lusnasa is over. You should come too.
I don't like to leave Barry or Megra in the lurch, though Megra claims she doesn't need me at all.
Ha! Either of them could buy and sell anything before breakfast, said Galoric. Barry will manage, and Megar would laugh at the idea of anyone leaving her in the lurch. She seems oddly content to learn baking and give up being a princess. Beth says she's making good progress too. I'd not be surprised if Megar didn't become a partner one day. Beth could, but lacks the ambition.
Megar can't resist organising people. She's been educated to lead. I guess I'll miss her, even though she's an elf.
I guess I'll think about it. Megra also said that I should go to college.
A few days later, Galoric was wakened by the smell of burning wood and oil. It was late at night, and everyone had gone to bed ages ago. He cautiously opened the door to the hall.
It was an inferno. The stairs were well alight.
He closed the door again, grabbed his pack, and went out to the yard. Ladder? He'd not seen one, nor a grappling hook and rope. He lobbed a bottle at what he presumed was Barry's window and another at Kevin and Megra's room. Fortunately, both broke with lots of noise. He shouted and then went and pulled out the wagon. Slowly, he pushed it across the yard. Barry was at the window making a rope out of bed sheets and blankets. He'd already thrown out several bundles.
Get the kids, Barry shouted. I'm fine.
The yard seemed endless. Barry was down his improvised rope and helped him push the wagon. Megra and Kevin were trying to make a rope too. They'd thrown out their stuff. They clambered on the roof of the wagon and then down via the front. Barry and Galoric got out the horses while Megra and Kevin opened the gates.
"Hitch the horses and get to the square," said Barry. "Don't try and save anything. I'll risk the alarm. Megra and Galoric should get inside the wagon."
The clang of the alarm had been started by someone. They could see the flames shooting into the sky. Barry ran ahead. By the time they had the wagon in the square, there was a crowd of people with the two water wagons, one with a steam-driven pump. The constable was in his nightshirt and directing operations. They were pumping water to the roofs of the adjoining properties. An old flatbed wagon arrived pulled by two horses. It was loaded with giant barrels of water and a charge of black powder. Half a dozen people pushed it into the ruined front of the building, burning shop as the horses were led away. Everyone then rushed to the square just down the road. There was an enormous explosion and then the fire was almost out. The men operating the big pumps and water wagons came back and resumed hosing down the properties on either side. The constable was satisfied that everyone was under control. Beth and the other two workers appeared and stood dumbfounded looking at the smoking ruins. Shop, bakery, kitchen and accommodation gone. The stables, stores and other workshops at the rear seemed intact as the entire yard was visible. The rear wall of the building fronting the street had collapsed. Beth and the two men ran up to the constable. "Are they?" she asked.
"I saw Barry on foot and also Kevin driving the wagon," he said. "Look over in the far corner of the square."
They went over in the shadows and saw the wagon. Some people were lighting oil lamps now as the light from the fire was gone. There was a faint grey glow in the east, the false dawn. It was still earlier than even the time the bread making started. No one was visible near the wagon. The horses had nose bags, probably with a few oats, but had been hobbled. The constable knocked on the rear double doors of the wagon. Barry came out.
"Everyone got out, constable."
"Can you set a guard on the ruins? The cellar's probably fireproof, and it has my coin and books. I keep them there in case of burglars, rare as they might be."
"Can I see?" said Beth.
"Yes, go in," said Barry. The two workers stood looking at Barry nervously.
Barry spoke to the men and sent them home with instructions to come in an hour later than usual to see what could be done. He climbed back in. Beth was boiling a kettle on the spirit stove. The three kids were sitting very quietly, wrapped in blankets in a row on the single fold-up bunk. Someone had lit the lamp. He sat on his bundle of clothes.
"I know you said not to save anything," said Galoric, "but Megra and I threw in all our bags and bundles and yours. It seemed like there was time."
"Yes," said Barry. "I think perhaps the wall only fell with the explosion, meant to put out the fire."
"That was arson," said Galoric. "Someone poured in oil and spirits. A flame had blew and there was a young lake in the hall."
"I didn't doubt it was arson," said Barry, "though I hadn't expected an attack so soon. Or arson. Perhaps more rocks."
There was a knock at the door. Barry opened it. Beth saw it was the constable.
"Give them tea with something in it," she said. "Then, constable, when you're done, bring them round to my place. The wagon is too small for four to sleep."
She hopped out after giving Barry a hug. The constable came in. He looked at the pale, drawn faces.
"I just want a quick word while it's fresh in your minds," he explained.
Tell Constable Farrell, Galoric, said Barry. Galoric slept in the kitchen beside the hall behind the shop. Kevin and Megra sleep quite separately in the room at the top of the stairs beside mine. The office is above the shop. The bedrooms are above the main kitchen.
Galoric repeated what little he knew about the start of the fire.
Some other time I'll get the account of how you actually managed to escape, as obviously the hall and stairs were almost instantly impassable, remarked the constable. I'm treating it as primarily attempted murder and arson as the secondary charge. Your modest dwarf saved you all. No doubt it's linked to the earlier threat.
I'm very grateful, Galoric, said Megra in common.
I'm sorry I was cross with you earlier. I mean, I was sorry even before this happened.
Barry had no idea what she said, but the constable had to know Common. He was amazed.
What earlier threats? Asked Galoric.
Oh, someone flung a rock through the window and demanded I get rid of Kevin, explained Barry. Sit down. I'll lead the horses. Have the tea.
He got out and took off the hobbles and nose bags, then led the horses pulling the wagon to Beth's house. Brian, Beth's husband, and Niall, her sister's husband, came out and led them round to the rear lane. They stabled the horses in the disused stable.
The kids are asleep, she said.
See you tomorrow, said the constable. Barry looked in.
I think don't disturb them. They look comfortable enough, even though they are not lying down. The couch back is also a mattress so as to have a double bed.
We've made up a bed for you in the parlour, said Beth. We were going to put them in the dining room.
Barry was glad he'd made the cellar hatch proof against flood and fire.